Hey, Band BFFs, this is Katie here. I wanted to let you know that this week is going to be a special episode just for you. Recently, Laura and I met with Kyle Smith, who is in charge of the Growing Band Director podcast, and we got a chance to speak with him about all kinds of great things, like our Band BFFs podcast, but also getting some advice from him and how he chooses music. We got to talk about some of our very favorite pieces and advice that we have for lots of different age levels of band directors. So we hope that you enjoy this crossover episode of Band BFFs and the Growing Band Director podcast.
Welcome back to the Growing Band Director Podcast. This is episode number 299. I'm here with Katie and Laura from Band BFF's podcast.
Hello.
Beautiful. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Of course.
We're here on a Friday after school.
Yes.
So we're all working at probably max 50% right now.
That's fair.
We're going to fake it till we make it, man.
Story of our careers.
That's right.
I would think. Yep. So nice to meet you guys. I kind of hooked up with you guys through Mark Casperson of Tuner Caddy. Kind of mentioned that he loves listening to your podcast. So when I
met with
him,
love Mark. He's the best.
He's awesome. Yeah.
So what I love about the episodes I've listened to of yours is that your mission of helping people with programming, right, is like just a huge. And if we talk about like the big things about being a band director, like programming's up there. It's such a huge. So I'm just curious, how did you guys kind of stumble upon this platform and how to do it and your mission and all that?
Absolutely. So Laura and I were best friends. And so a long time ago, we're in a book club together, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, we read a book called Office BFFs. And it's from the two ladies that are on The Office.
Which I feel terrible. I can't think of the actress's names right now.
Amy Poehler?
No.
Sorry.
No.
I can't remember. So
Jenna Fisher. And what's the lady's name? Dwight and... Angela Kinsey.
Pam and Angela.
Yes. So anyways, they wrote a book that we read in book club, and it was about how they met professionally through The Office, but through, you know, recording the episodes and hanging out and everything, they became real life best friends. And then they stayed that way for the rest of their life. They brought up their children together and all that good stuff. So Laura and I had like gotten together after we read that, and we really wanted to start a podcast that would be focused on helping young band directors in some way as a way for us to mentor and give back to other people.
Well, and I'll interject for just a second. Katie is the one who came up with the idea of doing a podcast. Right. And for over a year, she would be like, I still have that thing about doing a podcast. And I told her, I'm on board. We just have to have it has to be something that's different than what anyone else does. There's a ton of band director podcasts out there, and we don't want to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. And it just took us a little while to kind of find what we thought the right niche for us was going to be.
Right. And so we decided that something both of us felt really good and passionate about was programming, like you mentioned. It's something that a lot of young directors and even like seasoned directors like us struggle with at times, especially if the instrumentation of your group is not always like what is more traditional for other people. Mm-hmm. So we kind of come at it from the perspective of we've both had small bands, big bands, bands with no trumpets, bands with trumpets. And so we kind of use that experience to help other younger directors throughout the whole United States.
And, you know, to be honest, Katie and I've talked a lot about this now in the, you know, and towards the end of the career, I am feeling certainly more compelled to help younger teachers, like moving from the student realm to the teacher realm. And this was a great way for us to kind of, you know, shift into that that territory.
Yep.
I mean, it's such a need for all teachers, but especially if you go to college teachers and college students and you say, name grade two pieces. I mean, they just don't know. And no matter what colleges do, they're not going to get enough. So that's why I try to put out a lot of pieces. I like to talk about all the pieces. You do it definitely a different way, how you really get in depth with every single piece. Also, you mentioned the country, the world. I mean, when you're doing a podcast, it's everywhere. Like
you would think.
That's true.
I don't know if you've heard but like I get messages, hey, we're in New Zealand. and there's no professional development. And this podcast you listen to is like it. So
yeah, that's
which is
cool.
Amazing, yeah. Right? Because then you know you're having an impact on anybody that just needs it. You know, not everybody can have access to a mentor or somebody to help them. So if and we have had a lot of people reach out and like, oh my gosh, your episode on whatever piece was so helpful to me because I just didn't really know where to start or what to do or if it would fit my band. So yeah, it's awesome and it's rewarding to hear that from other
people. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's also nice to hear that somebody listened because you know you That's do right. it and you put it out and you're like, well, it's out there.
Hopefully somebody's gonna listen.
Hopefully we're helping someone.
And Mark is one of our biggest fans, so I'm gonna give him another shout out because he loves the episodes and he says that they help him pick his music every year with his coworkers as well. So I just
and
love
just
so
as a side note, I was telling you off air, but I'll tell people too. Terry White is one of my family's good friends, and one of your things was Mystery Ride. People don't
love
Terry
that
Wright.
Piece. Yes.
So and he actually mentioned, he said, I think they know more about the piece than I know as the band director, as the composer.
Yeah.
So both of you are middle school teachers, just like a side thought here for a second. My wife, when she was in college, thought she was going to be a high school teacher. And then she got a sniff of middle school and she's like, this is it. I don't want to go anywhere else. So for people who are maybe in college and thinking like, how do I know if I'm like set out for middle school? And some people can do multiple. It's not like you have to do one. So like, what do you think helps people know if middle school is kind of the track for them?
I love that question.
Well, for me personally, like your wife, I 100% intended to teach high school. And we haven't even talked about, I don't know what your story is, but I intended to teach high school. And it was not until I student taught, like the very end of college, I student taught and I was student teaching in a very well-respected high school band program and middle school feeder pattern, Marcus High School, and Lamar Middle School that was feeding them. And I had an incredible student teaching experience, but I fell in love with the middle school kids. They were so awkward and still adorable and elementary minded, and they smell bad and they needed me. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Within a month of student teaching, I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And then certainly I realized after student teaching or through student teaching, the impact you can have teaching beginners. Like that was huge for me. And I'm Katie and I both are a little bit of control freaks. And so the idea of just like, I get to have my hands in that very early stage and you can't blame anybody else for something being wrong, you know, teaching those beginners. So I fell in love with them.
I don't know. I think it was somewhere near year 6 or 7.
Oh no.
I had to do it.
Cancel.
That I realized that my personality was better suited for middle school. Cause I like to be goofy and fun and talk to kids just like just have a good time.
Yeah.
I really did know in 8th grade that I was going to be a middle school band director. So I didn't really ever want to do high school for the reason Laura just said. I always thought it was just so cool to watch you, yourself, or kids, or whoever, learn how to do a thing like learn an instrument in 1 year.
Yeah.
Like I learned how to play the trumpet when I was in college. And I was like, this is so cool that like at the beginning of the year, I just like started renting a trumpet and opened the case, didn't know how to do anything. And then by the end of my college career, I could play the trumpet super well. So that's a really neat thing that a gift that we have to give to others. And of course, it's great to craft, you know, a musician as they go into high school and do all the nitty gritty and little detail work. But I don't think there's anything cooler than going from nothing to I can now play songs all by myself and read music and sound like a real human. I just think that's the coolest thing.
I also really like that we get a connection with them, I think, in a different way than a high school director does for 7 years. Even if you have a high school director come down to your campus and is visible on your campus or sees the kids, I mean, they know us from the get-go. And that feeling of walking in the high school band hall and the kids going, oh, Miss Bell, Miss Lewis, they love that. I like that we get that connection truly over the course of that 7 year time period and instead of just being limited to a small time frame.
Middle school is where it's at. As a high school teacher,
Yes.
I can tell you. I mean,
Awesome.
I teach with my wife, who is a middle school teacher, at where we're at. So I get her students, and I know what it's like to have a great middle school teacher and then teach those students afterwards. I mean, if I didn't
Yes.
do my job, things would go poorly. But you know, the middle school teacher is the one who sets that, whether it's beginners and all the way through. I love that. If people have not like checked out the podcast, I think at this airing, if there's something like 76 episodes or something like that, what can they expect for like length and pacing and how you go through it and all that?
Absolutely. So we try our best to make every episode be around 20 to 25 minutes, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little bit more. And we try to put out a new podcast episode weekly. Sometimes we get too busy and we're always like, sorry, it's the middle of the summer and we're both on vacation or whatever it is. We do have to get together. We told Kyle before we started, we have to get together to do the podcast. And so sometimes we're both very busy, but we try our best to do that so that way we can have as much material out there as possible so that directors can go back and listen and find what might fit their group for that year.
I think one of the cool things is that we're trying to amass a collection of resources. So it's not time specific, right? So they can go back at any time. That I think is kind of something that makes this type of podcast a little bit unique. And Katie mentioned the timing of it. Our goal initially was we were like, if someone can listen in the car on the way to work, and get an episode in on the way to work or on the way home from work or on their lunch. I'm sitting here at lunch and I have a score in front of me and I'm not sure, so I'll just throw the podcast on and follow the score. It was meant to be in kind of chunks like that that were going to be easily digestible, not something that you have to sit down and carve out an hour of time for.
And then our episodes also just go through a piece of music that we're featuring that week. Sometimes we do special episodes where we might do like three pieces on a theme, like we've done a fall concert programming type of episode where we'll talk about three pieces, but not as much in depth. But typically, we try to go in depth about like scoring issues if there are any present, how
Rehearsal
to rehearsal
strategies.
strategies, tuning things, percussion issues, or how to deal if you don't have enough percussion or too many percussion. So we kind of just give band directors just all the little tiny things that they may need to figure out, is this a piece that we can play or maybe not?
One thing that I've done on a number of episodes for the growing band director is actually hosted the composer and done a one-on-one with the composer. And then they'll talk about the piece. And then afterwards, we'll actually play a snippet of the piece for people to listen to from the composer. I love hearing from a composer about their thoughts behind the piece because you know the program notes, but to like physically see the person and then hear them talk about it has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is so cool.
As people who do score study all the time, you know, I think there's a difference between doing score study for a music theory class and a score study for to know what's going on, but also all the instrument pedagogy things. And that's
Yeah,
something that I
absolutely.
think comes with time. It's like you and I could, we, the three of us could look at a score and point out issues that we would find. And they may not be issues, but like knowing your kids, you already know what they're going to miss in measure 40. I mean, it just is
That's
what,
right. That's
right?
exactly
So,
right.
yeah.
And that's a great point. And that's why we wanted to do this podcast, is for people who maybe can't do what we can do. We can do it pretty quick. And even if it's a piece neither of us have ever played, we can sit down with the score and quickly kind of go through it and decide what we want to talk about. But younger band directors, more inexperienced band directors just may not be able to do that. And so our podcast hopefully is helping them with going, okay, I see what they're saying. They said I have to have really good French horns, and I don't. So this is not the piece for me, or whatever it might be.
So score study help. So how do you advise somebody who knows how to look at a score and say this is D minor and that's the one and the four and five and all that? Like, how do you go next to help them towards their own journey of score study?
Absolutely. You want
Yeah, sure.
to.
So I think the key is identifying, first of all, listening to it, not just looking at it, but listening to it, and then identifying like your priorities. This is going to be melody here. This is counter melody. This is whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then approaching it from that aspect of it. So I think you have to be really familiar with the piece. I think you have to understand, and I know what you're saying about like they could analyze the score, but also is that key center really band friendly for a young band? Or, you know, if you're playing something in the key of D flat, that's not, which I've done, wouldn't do again, but not with middle school kids, but that's not a happy key center. E
as
flat.
Long as the trombones don't play D flat.
That's right.
Which they're going to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's something that, you know, we've even talked about on our podcast. Some of the pieces we have reviewed, they aren't always in friendly keys,
right,
or they're in a different key center. But that's what we're trying to do, is say, even though you might want to do this piece with your kids, here are some strategies for how you can rewrite the chord.
That's
like
right.
if,
That's exactly
if this
right.
chord has half the band because of what your instrumentation looks like for your kids. You have billions of flutes and trumpets, and they're all on the fifth of the chord.
Or the third,
you,
yeah.
Right? You can rewrite it and say, well, just take this and change it up. So we try to give people strategies. And also, I guess, like, one person came up to us at one of the conventions we presented at, and they said, I love that you give me permission through your podcast to do something as
yeah.
a director. And so we're kind of giving people permission to say, oh, well, you know, Katie and Laura said it's okay for me to rewrite this one chord. So
yeah.
it's more friendly for my band. So we're trying to give people strategies and I guess the ownership to say, it doesn't have to be exactly what's on the paper. Although what's on the paper sometimes is great, but sometimes it might
it
not be the
fit
best
your
for your group.
That's right. I think it's also important to like figure out, what are you trying to get out of the piece? What is the goal? Like, are we trying to teach phrasing? Are we trying to use this piece to really help the kids grow with phrasing? Are we trying to improve their technique? Or, you know, I think that's really important when you're studying a score. I think you need to identify that. Like, what is our goal? What is our goal? What do we hope to get out of this? And then is it meeting that need? So I think all that's important when you're analyzing.
And I don't know about you, Kyle, but when I was a young director, I didn't think about any of that.
Yeah.
I was just like,
I like this piece.
I was like, hey, head director, what should I do? Or yeah. Oh, I love this piece. It sounds so great. And I always tell my kids, one of my favorite pieces to listen to is October by Whitaker. I'm never going to get to play October with my band because it's in an awful key signature for middle school kids. And it's too mature for them to play with the kind of maturity that I would expect. So, you know, it's hard sometimes. They're like, oh, this sounds cool. But then it's like, well, this may not fit your group.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to help with.
Is it okay for me to give a specific piece example?
Do it.
Okay, so like here is a great example, I think, for young band directors sometimes. I love the piece Fortis by Gasley, but if your band is not good at articulation, then you are going to be in big trouble. You're going to be in big trouble. So it is a great, it's a great piece of music and kids love it. It's got a catchy melody to it, but you've got to be able to look at the score and say, wow, what my kids need to be able to, and maybe you want to use it, like I said, as a teaching tool, as a performance aspect from teaching their articulation separately. But I think all those things are, you know, not just key. We've talked a lot about keys, which I do think is important, but you've got to look at all of the aspects of the piece. Are the rhythms too challenging? What is the style considerations?
Can they count it? Can
right.
they play all the rhythms that are in right. there? Yeah.
It's funny.
So
you talk a little bit about rewriting.
Yes.
Every composer that I talk to, I try to question them about, when is it okay to rewrite some of your music? And literally,
what do they say?
Every single one of them says, make it work for your band. As
yeah.
long as it, as long as it stays within the intent of
yes.
the composition, you're
yeah.
free to do whatever.
Don't
I haven't had one.
The integrity
I haven't
of
had
the piece.
One composer say anything different.
That's
which,
good to hear.
Which
that's
is
awesome.
Great. I played Our Kingsland Spring a long time ago, and it was like right when it first came out. And there's this like high G at the top of the staff in the first trumpet part, and I was like, I don't know that my second band can like do that very well at the end of a piece. So I actually emailed Mr. Hazo and asked, like, is it okay? And this was like literally my second year as a band director. And he was like, of course, do whatever you need to do. But it's nice to just know that, like, you know, composers are cool with it too. They want to see kids be successful and have fun playing their music, I'm
that's
sure.
Right.
So that's our goal too, right? We
yep.
want to make sure they're successful and they're having fun. They can't be successful and have fun playing if it's above their level.
Yeah.
You're talking about weird keys, quote unquote, for band. So one of the best pieces ever, I don't know if you agree, but for me, grade three, and on him song of Philip Bliss. I mean, there's very few pieces that are so much.
That's the one I was referring to. She played it and she's like, I'm not gonna do it again.
So that piece, I mean, it's so fabulous for so many
It's
reasons, but
incredible.
it is a
It
grade three for a reason, right?
Yes.
And I never knew why it was in D flat major. I'm like, can't he could put it in E flat, right? I don't know if you know the story, but then
I don't.
I was talking to somebody who said, oh yeah, I know why it's in D flat. So Holsinger, apparently when he wrote it, the top note that the band he could write was for G, for trumpet. And there's the chord near the end where the third is on the top and it's a trumpet. So it had to be the key of E flat for trumpet. That was why. I thought it was because of the pinkies and like how it fits so well. I'm like, nope. It was like all centered around that.
That is really funny. Well, dang, that kid that can only play up to G. That is
Well,
like, I mean, that, yeah,
that's pretty cool that he wrote the piece
that is
for that
incredible.
group and made sure that it like hit the parameters and everything. So,
Yeah.
yeah,
Well, it is a
it
hard
is a hard
key with
piece.
middle school. Even if they press the right buttons, it is a hard key to make
There's
sound.
a sense of maturity that you
Oh, for
need.
real. Absolutely.
And we know there are those middle school bands that you hear and you're like, wow, okay, they
Oh,
sound, yes,
amen.
yes.
They can do that. And Lara's band sounded great on it. I mean,
Nice.
no dig. Like, she did great. I heard her band play it at UIL.
Well.
So it's just a hard piece overall.
So as you guys are kind of choosing pieces, I assume right now you have like a lineup. You're like, all right, the next five we're doing or whatever. So how long are you like studying the score? Is it sometimes that you're doing the piece already, or you're like, no, we just got to put in an hour or two on this? And how do you cross over? Like you do the form and I'll do the this, or like you just both do it and then talk about it, or how does that prep go?
So we have a running list of podcast episodes that we'd like to do in the future. We were able to populate that list from we presented at Texas Music Educators Association in February, and we talked about some grade twos that we had already done episodes on and some new ones. And we also asked the audience to get involved and participate. So they filled out a Google form and told us if there was like an episode they wanted us to do in the future. So that was great because we got like 50 pieces right there that, were pieces maybe that we weren't familiar with, but that other people wanted to hear, or pieces that we were planning to do in the future. And we're like, oh, well, good. I guess they want us to do an episode on that piece. So we try to make sure that we also, when we release the episodes, that we do it not like all grade ones, like for 2 months. So we try to mix it up and do a grade one and then a March and then a grade two and then maybe a grade three and then a special episode. So we try to mix it up a little bit just so that people who maybe they're listening for a specific grade level, they really want a bunch of grade ones. We can keep the other people coming back for more too. How do we do the planning? Well, we sit down together here and we talk about the score before we do the podcast episode. As you mentioned, with us having more experience than, younger band directors, it's not too difficult for us to sit down with, the iPad and writing in notes of things we want to say, or, ooh, this is like maybe a little out of the range of a euphonium for most bands or whatever. So we'll sit down and we'll talk through it, and then we'll record the episode. Usually, Lara and I, one of us will have played the piece,
That's what I was going to say. That,
but not always. There's sometimes someone will say, I really want you guys to do an episode on this brand new piece to the PML. So, and we're super happy to do that. We may not have played it with one of our bands, but I mean, we love to hear new music and review anything that's out there that's of great quality. So.
We always start by listening together with the score in front of us, and 90% of the time, one or both of us has played the piece, so we already know what pitfalls we encountered at the time. And if it is a piece that we have not played, listening to it, and we focus on grade one, twos, and threes. So for the most part, we can listen and look at a score at the same time and tell pretty quickly. Certainly, if you're playing a piece, you may discover some other little things as you get into the nitty-gritty, but it's not it, it it's it doesn't usually take us very long. A grade three piece may take us a little bit longer to score, study, and prep beforehand, but generally it doesn't take us long. We listen to it, we talk about it. This is what I did, this is what you did, this worked for me, this worked for you. Okay, great, let's say that. Go.
And that's the cool thing about doing a podcast with your best friend is like she may have done something with her band. I may have done something different. We can talk about both ways that we taught something because you can always learn from anybody. You know, it might not, might, her way might work for someone. My way might work for someone. Who cares? As long as, you know, they get the information and they get to try something new.
That's right.
So you do a piece for the first time, and then a few years later, a couple of years, whatever it is, you go back and do it again. The experience of this is a great piece, I'm going to do this again. But then the second time it didn't hit the same way that you thought it was going to be the first time. So like this whole like reusing music, you know, it's fine. Like you don't want to do the same piece every year for forever, right? But so like how do people know if they should do the piece again or if they're like, eh, I should probably should leave that one forever?
Oh, man.
So I personally try really hard to not recycle UIL pieces. So UIL in Texas is like our big band contest for the year.
It's a state
It's a
contest.
statewide contest where we're being judged on a rubric and we get a rating, 1 to 5, and one is the best. So we're hoping to get ones from the judges. And so I have a list of my personal programming for my whole career. And so I try not to recycle a piece for that contest. Although it can happen if there's a be like you mentioned, if there's a great piece that you're like, oh man, that would fit my band again, then like do it, you know, as long as it's been in Texas, the rule is you can't do it every 2 years. So you have to wait and then you can
Three middle
recycle it
school.
or three. Yeah. But I mean,
But if you're at a school concert,
yeah, then I
absolutely.
mean, whatever. Yeah. Like I every single year at my beginner concert in the wintertime in December, we play We Will Rock You. Because like, hey, why not? That's fun. Kids love it, parents love it, everybody's stomping and clapping along. So yes, I recycle that because it's a tried and true beginner piece that all of the kids and the parents love to play or love to
And
hear.
what's the
So
new piece that's the big hit that
Mechanical Monsters
yes, I'm thinking
for
of a different one.
beginners.
Is it Band Rocks?
Oh, I'm
The
sure.
band. Oh my gosh, that one
There's
hits
so
hard.
many pieces though. That's the cool thing is the composers are starting to like understand that you can make a lot of money if you like cater to middle school bands because we're gonna pick like cool new pieces that other people haven't heard. And grade ones are so much fun when you can find a good one that the kids love and that you can also find enjoyment out of teaching. So,
Well, and I think in regards to repeating pieces, so I think a lot of that depends, like Katie mentioned, of course, if it fits your band. For me, a lot of it depends on the level of the band. So, like for beginners, I repeat, like my winter concert, we have one piece that we will change a year, and the other two, we do the same two pieces. Spring concert, kind of the same deal. We've got four or five pieces, and we go through those. And I use those, and at the beginner level, it's because our learning process is happening at the same pace consistently year after year for the most part. So those work, and I know these pieces are good for reinforcing a skill set. And I think you have to keep all of that in mind when you're talking about programming for an older band as well. It all comes down to what does my band need to learn? Where do we need to grow? And if we need to grow in this area, you know, if we need to grow tonally, then I'm going to find something that really helps us stay in a range that is going to showcase our beautiful tones or stretch us a little bit this way or that way, but using it as a teaching tool. Sometimes you can find, I mean, often you can find that the same piece may be a great teaching tool. I mean, I definitely have repeated pieces for, I've not been as good as Katie. There's not been a piece I've ever played three times, but there are pieces I'll repeat. Okay, I did this 8 years ago and I really loved it. You know, it was great for this. So I think you just have to start with, again, what is your goal? Where are you trying to teach and stretch your kids? And does this fit?
And like both of us last year played a Longford Legend. It's a wonderful piece. And I
Oh,
had already previously played it in my career. I don't know if
I
you
had not. It
have.
was the first time I
So
played.
she had
What a great
not, but I
piece.
had. Say that
Great
again.
piece. Great piece.
I
Oh,
know.
one of
It's
my all
wonderful.
times.
And like honestly, Laura said first, I'm gonna play Longford Legend with my band. And I was like,
I love
oh
that
my
piece.
gosh, you know what? That would really fit my band well this year too. So we ended up playing the same piece, which is hilarious. And so did many other bands in our region. But that's beside the fact. But like, if you have a great alto sax player, that's a great piece for it, right? And so you just have to, like Lara said, not only think about what's your goal, how do you want to grow your band, but also look at what's in front of you. And if you happen to have the right soloist for a piece, or there's a clarinet feature in a piece and you've got a really big, great clarinet section, then that might be one to repeat. But you don't want to just repeat it because you loved it. It may not fit your group for that year, and you don't want to set the kids up for, not failure, but you don't want to set them up to where they're having to struggle to get that piece under their fingers.
I think that's a young band director thing. I mean, it's certainly, I know I did this. My literature knowledge was nil when I started teaching.
Me too.
And it was often a, I like that. I listen to a, ooh, I like the way that sounds. I want to play that with my band. And then you start working on it and you're pulling your hair out. It was such a mistake. So yeah, I think just, again,
Know your
finding
limits.
that's, oh, that's it. Yes. Yeah.
The advice you're giving is also great when choosing music for your band regarding grade level, because you might say, we're a grade two band, but maybe this grade one is perfect for you guys. And
That's right.
on the same side, it's like one of the pieces you did was blue and green music, which is
Yeah,
in air
love that
quotes, a three,
piece.
right? Like we'll call that a
Right.
three. But I was talking with, forgetting his name, Beyond Artless podcast. Anyway, he was part of the commission for blue and green music with Hazel.
Oh,
Like
cool.
they did it through his school.
Right.
How can I not remember his name? Anyway, he
I love
said,
that
yeah, that's
piece.
it was like too hard for them. It's just the way that it worked out was not. So it's like that's a three, and but that's not on the same level of difficulty as the Bach Prelude and Fugue in B flat major. Like totally
Right.
different, right? So
Right.
know your kids, match what they're being asked to do with what they can do, not this is a grade three, let's play it.
Well, and Katie and I talk a lot. Like, I think sometimes in Texas, band directors, especially in Texas, I feel like band directors can get really caught up in the grade level of the piece, and like you said, well, we want to be really competitive. I have to play a grade four. I have to play. What you have to do is you have to sound really good on whatever it is that you select. That needs to be your priority. Get out of your own way in thinking that grade level matters. What matters is, can your kids sound really good? That's what matters.
Absolutely.
Chris Gleason was the name I was looking for.
Oh, there it is.
I
Okay.
was trying to look up my score for blue and green to see if I could
Chris
figure it out, but I
Gleason. Yeah.
couldn't find it that fast.
Another sort of off the topic question that we haven't prepared you for. I'd like to know on your main instrument. What is a tip that band directors you wish that they knew that a lot of them don't?
Okay, good. So
I got
first,
mine already.
I'm gonna plug ourselves real quick. We are presenting at Midwest Band and Orchestra Clinic in December. So we hope some of you guys will check us out there. And our clinic is about pedagogy and how to teach quickly from the podium, and like rehearsal strategies for teaching pedagogy, not only to beginners, but even more in the band setting when you have all the instruments in front of you. What are some quick things that you can say and help your band to sound their best individually so that everybody sounds good together? So we're very passionate about this topic as well. So I'm excited you asked. Well, I am a flute player, and one thing that I don't like that people sometimes say about flute is that you just need to blow harder or blow less, because that actually has nothing to do with how to sound good on the flute. And in fact, flute playing is very similar to brass playing. And I think a lot of times people don't understand that they have a lot of crossover, like air direction. That matters when you play the flute. Like your aperture size, that matters a lot when you play the flute. And I think sometimes people just go, oh, well, it's a high B flat. So we don't have an octave key like the sax. We don't have a register key. So just blow harder and the high B flat will come out. Well, you will sound very sharp
Very
and airy,
shrill and
and
nasty.
nobody will want to listen to that. So that's my little thing that sometimes I hear people say, just use more air. Or just use less air. And I'm like, no, nope, that's actually not how you
So
make a high note going
do you use the
above.
head joint only for the low and the high sounds and all that to
Some
help
to
with that?
absolutely. So, like my beginner class right now, we're still working on that. A little plug, I guess, for Musical Mastery. That's the book that I use to start my classes. And there's a whole thing about head joint playing. So, they'll use, and we use NeuMoPros as well, so that they can see their air direction when they play. And a shout out to a brand new product called the Visi Air, created by Tony Bianchetta, my trombone private lesson teacher. And it's literally a NeuMoPro, but for brass instruments. So if you've never heard of it, I would go and look that up because our beginners have been using it and it's awesome because they can say, Mr., like my coworker, Mr. Brink, he can say, we're going to play an F on the trombone, and they won't accidentally play a B flat because they've practiced on their Visi Air, making sure that they know what their air is supposed to look like for an upper note. Same thing for the flute. On a NeuMoPro, you can see where you're supposed to direction your air. You can look in the mirror to see what your aperture should look like to play the high note or the low note on a head joint. And then it's the same thing. You just put it on a flute and you just sound good instead of, well, let's just shove our flute together and just play and see how it
On
goes,
a
you
whim and a
know?
prayer.
Yeah. So that's a big thing. And I know a lot of people say flute is really hard to teach. So we'll probably spend quite a bit of time on flute because Laura's a great flute teacher too.
I'm a percussionist. So for me, I think I have a couple of things. So I, it frustrates me when band directors who are don't appreciate percussionists when you put all the responsibility for pulse and timing on your percussion section when that is absolutely unfair and false. Every individual in the ensemble is responsible for pulse and timing. But I think band directors, one of the biggest things in terms of percussion is you need to be knowledgeable about what sound you want. So if you don't like experiment with different implements. Right, and understand the difference between what a rubber mallet sounds like on the xylophone and what a brass mallet sounds like on the bells, what an acrylic mallet sounds like. You need to understand the color and texture difference of those sounds and be able to verbalize that. Or it, you know, especially if you don't have a percussion director or someone like that in your rehearsal or near for you to ask for help. But it's easy to, I mean, it's just experimentation. I don't really like that. Can we play the woodblock with this instead? Or no, I didn't like the way that cymbal, you know, that cymbal was too, there's too many overtones in that cymbal crash. Let's hear something. So I think that is huge. So
And
pet.
on that note, real quick. So you brought up earlier that it's really important to score study. Laura is saying it's really important to not only score study, but to also like percussion study. So that way you're not in the rehearsal and going, oh, there's a wind chimes part and I didn't even notice that. I gotta set it up. I gotta have the different implements and mallets ready
Ready to
for the
go.
kids so they can try
You
different
have to own
things
it
in the
too. If you
rehearsal.
don't
That's
have
right.
wind chimes
Yes.
and it
That's
says wind
right.
chimes.
That's right. Exactly.
I also think with percussion specifically, extending a little grace and understanding that like if you are, let's you're the snare drummer on the march, right? If you're sitting in a section of flutes, there are probably five, six, seven, eight flutes that are playing the same part as you. So if you flub a measure or, hey, we've tried this 10 times and we've tried these practice techniques and you're really struggling with these three beats, we're going to go ahead and edit this or modify this to fit you. When you have one snare drummer, there is no editing or modification. So I think extending grace to the percussion and understanding they're on an island back there, and often it is one person covering a part, and you know, it's more like a piccolo or a Barry Sax. You know, but even with that, the Barry Sax is covered in the tuba. You know, there's nobody else playing the triangle part, there's nobody else playing that suspended cymbal role. So, I think you know, extending the kids a little bit of grace, not that your percussionist shouldn't be prepared, but just cut them some slack.
How about some tips for doubling when you have a piece that you really want to do for the band, but you got four more kids in the percussion section than you need? So as a percussionist, what are some
And
things you do to
we do
hide them
talk about
and
that some on our podcast, and more on our end, we also talk about what parts you may want to
Yeah.
actually use
Yeah.
if you don't have enough kids.
So in terms of doubling, it is, if you have the equipment for it, I think it is always okay to, depending on how large the section is, to take an oboe part and put it in marimba, right? You can also get really creative. We will often, like, I had 9 percussionists in my top ensemble last year. That was a lot. But we can do, okay, we're going to assign 2 of you to snare, and we are rotating daily. One of you's on pad, one of you's on snare, one of you's on pad, one of you's on snare. The nice thing about that is you have a backup. There's not that fear of, okay, it's concert day and the snare drummer broke his wrist. You know, what are we going to do? You have a backup. So I think that's smart. Doing that, it's okay to put more kids on mallet stuff. It's also okay. I've done this where you go, all right, so this kid is a talented percussionist and I want to extend their knowledge. So I'm going to take the tuba part and you're going to read marimba, and you're gonna do this on bass clef and do this on marimba. So you can even kind of help kids out, help stretch themselves and grow them in other ways. I would not, I think sometimes people just go, oh, I'll just put 2 people on snare drum, or I'll put 3 people on snare drum, or 8 people on bells or whatever. That I think you have to be a little bit more creative than that, and making sure that it doesn't end up overbalancing the wind section. But lots of things like that that you can do to help your percussionist.
Couple of thoughts, the things similar to that that I do. So sometimes if I have an extra kid who's really weak, I might have them play the bass drum part with the bass drum player, but on like we have tons of toms and whatever. So like on a big floor tom, right? With maybe a timpani mallet, so it's not super loud. What
Exactly.
I do a lot if I have 2 kids who are going to play a snare drum, I'll actually do, and again, I teach high school, so it might be a little bit different, but snares on, snares off.
Yeah,
And
I've done that a lot of times.
they both have to play at like half volume. So like kind of forces them to, and we're in a marching program too. So our kids like to overplay, if they're drumline kids, like the forte on this is different from the forte on the field.
Yeah, and that's good that you give them that distinction, because that's really important.
So people need to check out your clinic at Midwest.
Yes,
Hope to see you
hopefully.
there. Can you give us like another non-instrument specific thing? Like what's something somebody's who's not going to be able to be there is going to get out of it?
We're gonna talk about all the instruments basically, but also, like, we're both very passionate about continuing to talk about what you can say to kids on the podium quickly to fix them. A lot of times, younger directors might be on the podium and they're just like, their hair's on fire because they're trying to look at their score and know what they're going to say, but they're also trying to listen and react to what's happening in the band hall. So we're going to give them some ideas about, like, okay, let's say you finished a rep and you're just not sure exactly what happened. Here are some things you can do. You can isolate the melody line. And then here are things you can tell flutes. Flutes, you're sounding a little airy. Why don't you pull the bunny muscle down more? Clarinets, you're a little flat. You need to make sure you click in by pushing up with your right-handed thumb into your top teeth. So we're gonna try to give, like, little things that people can say, and maybe even like a little menu where they can, like, look at it on the podium and go, well, I'm not sure, so let me say this to my oboes and see if that fixes it. So we're trying to give, like, practical ways that the pedagogy can continue to be, just practiced and grown when they're in, like, a full ensemble.
I think non-instrument specific stuff, we have a ton of instrument specific things, but non-instrument specific stuff, I think the importance of, we talk a lot on our podcast about, like, creating melody sheets and things like that, where you essentially turn a piece of music into a flex band piece, right? And that makes the teaching process so much easier.
So much.
Or tricks like, okay, the rhythm is what's giving us an issue. Okay, we'll take the notes out of the equation and count the rhythm. Play it on a concert F, right? Those are just from the podium tricks, things like that. Or the opposite. It's not the rhythm that's giving us issues, it's the notes that's giving us issues. Okay, we're gonna play every note in measure 17 like a half note. Ready, here we go. So I think little tricks like that, can help refine the teaching process and make it more efficient, which is ultimately what it's about. It's about efficiency from the podium, right? make as much better in a short amount of time as you can.
And Laura and I are both really passionate. We talk about this in pretty much every single episode. We like to mark our students' parts ahead of time before we give them out. So that way we're literally studying every single part. And we'll talk about that at Midwest too, like what we look for, what we mark on the parts. But we go
Independent from the score,
independent
it's
from the
different.
score. So we're looking at a clarinet part and we're saying, okay, you've got to use alternate C here, or hey, you're going to have to do left here and right here, or clarinets, we've got an A, you're going to have to use resonance fingering. And we write it in their part. So that way, again, like Laura just said, we're more efficient on the podium where we don't have to tell the clarinets how to do that or figure it out while you're in rehearsal. You've already figured it out. You've already told them and you've already put it on their music. So that way, when you're teaching the piece, they're not going, I don't know how to play that. They
And
go, oh, Miss Lewis already told me it's right and it's left. Okay, I'm good to go.
I think there is score study at the middle school level. Now, certainly I know at high school this is different, but at the middle school level, for me, score study is more macro. So what is the overall big picture? Where is our peak? Where, you know, what is phrasing like? Where's the melody balance, accompaniment, blah, blah, blah. And when I go through those individual parts, that's instrument specific. That is, what is this kid seeing? You will sometimes see, like, it can be frustrating. You can be on the podium and kids keep missing a repeat or, you know, something weird like that. And it's not until you look at the individual part that you see, oh my gosh, that was in a really weird place. Or they had to look, that was strange how that worked. It makes a little bit more sense. So it is a great way for us to see it from the kids' perspective. It doesn't take away from score study, but again, just seeing it from the kids' perspective, I think makes a big difference. And there are a lot of people that I think it's kind of a controversial topic of, is it okay to pre-mark your kids' parts? We feel so strongly about it because of efficiency. It is not about, like, the kid are we write, you know, right to left or left to right. The kids know what buttons to press. We are just catching it in the moment for them faster than they would catch
We're
it,
not
right?
writing note
We're not writing
names. We're
note
not doing
names,
anything like
yes.
that. We're just helping with things that problems that we already foresee in the piece.
Yeah.
Not problems, but just rehearsal things that we're going to have to deal with. So instead of us from the podium going, okay, everybody, so look at this measure. It's a dotted quarter note. Here's how it goes. You write in one and two with a down, up, down arrow, up arrow, down arrow. And that way the kids go, oh, yeah, that's a dotted quarter note. I know how to do that. And we typically do this more with our sub non-varsity bands and a little bit less maybe with non-varsity and even less with the varsity. And especially through the year, we start with more.
Yep.
And then as you go through the year, the kids are starting to learn like what to look for based on what we have marked earlier in the year.
And it trains them in how we want the music marked.
Yeah.
I forget who it was, but I was meeting with a middle school band director a couple of years ago, and they said they actually sometimes give the part in two-sided, and like it's the same thing on both sides, and one side has some note names written in for notes that they're working on or whatever, and they're allowed to use that page when they need to. But the goal is that they're flipping it over and using the page that doesn't have it. I had not heard that before.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, we could even do that with the
With
blanks, a
the
blank and a marked up part, so.
Your the presentation seems, if it's all about pacing, then that's going to directly impact the culture of your band. Because
Oh.
if your pacing is good, kids love being in rehearsal, things are good. If it's too slow, too fast, it's too hard, too easy. I mean, this is like huge when it comes to the overall dynamic of where you teach.
Agreed.
Yes.
No,
And
I mean, like,
the fact that you have control over that, it's like kind of scary, you know? But once people recognize that, keep their pacing up to a good
Yeah.
level, it changes everything.
And
It
not
does.
and also like not just keeping pacing up, but also you have to have the knowledge of what you're going to say every day. So that's not just score study, that's lesson planning. And that's not just lesson planning, that's again having deep knowledge of each part so that when a kid asks you, "Hey, Miss Lewis, I have a trill in this measure. How do I do that?" Then you go, "Oh, I've already planned that out. Here's how you do it." Or if you don't know, well, let me ask my private lesson teacher and get back to you, or let me ask my colleague. So there's nothing wrong with telling a student too if you're unsure of something, like, "Hey, I'll get back to you tomorrow on that. I hadn't thought about that." But most of the time, if you've done your, you know, due diligence ahead of
Yeah.
time, you've already come through each of those little things and you can tell them ahead of time how to do the trill.
I also think understanding what is practical to be accomplished in a time set. So you may have had a plan like, okay, this is what I want to accomplish in this rehearsal. And then we arrive at a section that's given the kids more trouble than you prepared for you than you thought it was going to give them. I think being able in the moment to go, okay, I can stop and work on this for 15 minutes with my saxes and clarinets, but everybody else is going to be sitting there twiddling their thumbs and throwing spitballs. Then, okay, that's not an efficient use of my time right now. Table that, come back later.
But that's something that comes with age and
Experience.
experience. I call it cut bait. Like, it's time to cut bait.
Yep.
Like, we're not working on that anymore. You have to work on that at home, and I will hear you play it in 5 more days or whatever. So, but that's something sometimes younger directors just go, I'm going to start at the beginning, and we're just going to play, and we're going to see how it goes. Sometimes you don't need to start a piece at the beginning. Sometimes you need to start in the middle where there's a different key signature or a
Or
different
2D band,
tempo
it
or
starts
something.
with some solos, and you need to start at
And
2D
that's
band.
okay, right? Like, you just got to figure out what's going to work best for your group.
1 year, I put two and two together that the way you rehearse a marching band show over weeks is similar to how you can rehearse a concert band piece. So, for example, we know we have to work our closer this week, whatever, fine. Well, then in the concert band piece, how about you work the last page of the piece or whatever,
Yes.
work? It's just a puzzle. And
That's
over time, you
exactly
put it
right.
together.
That's exactly right. It's all a journey.
All right. Some of your favorite pieces that you've experience in the podcast. And a side thought, have you actually fallen in love more with a piece after you've worked on it more, like talked about it?
Yes. Not only that, but also we learn from each other. So, like last year, we did an episode in season two call about Pit in the Pendulum. Hit the pit in the pendulum, sorry. And we actually just included it, like Laura had played it with her band.
I've played it a
And
million
yeah,
times.
and it was like a small portion of an episode. It was about like some things you could program for like a spooky Halloween
Fall
themed
concert.
concert in the fall. And I was like, oh, that sounds fun. And then the piece was added to the PML this past year. And so we were like, amazing. And I remembered that she had said how much she loved it.
And it's like a 15-year-old. I use it with region bands all the time. I can't now that it's on the PML because other people will play it, but.
But like I said, I love that piece. And so my non-varsity band played it last year. And it was because Laura had just played it and said, we should review this piece. And I was like, well, I love it now. And it's a piece probably that we'll play again because it's great and the kids loved it. So that sort of thing happens all the time. Do we fall more in love with the piece once we've reviewed it? Kind of sometimes, like we just did an episode this season on Danza Zanzare. It's a brand new piece that came out in 2025. And I loved listening to it. We played it at TBA, which is a convention in the summer for band directors. And I love it. I've been playing it with my band and I'm becoming more and more excited about the piece, and my students love it too. So that definitely is a good like side effect of doing the podcast.
I think a piece that comes to mind for me, I love Appalachian Morning and played it years ago. And when we did an episode on it, we both talked about it as we were going through the score. It was like bringing back all these memories and going, oh, I remember that. And oh, God, this is so good. This piece is so good. It's so well written, so definitely. And in fact, I just recommended that. I was talking to another band director yesterday who was like, okay, I have a really good solo trumpet and a really good solo clarinet and a really good solo flute. And I was like, have you listened to Appalachian Morning? So, I think the deeper dive you go into a piece, if you've already played it, like we have with many of ours, yeah, I think it's easy to look at it and reflect. We've also had the opposite, where we've looked at it and we've gone, I can't believe we were crazy enough to do this. What were we thinking? This is hard.
And sometimes you hear a piece on a day and you love it. You hear it again and you're like, eh. It's just it hits you differently.
Or your children can't perform it to the level you want them to perform it at, and you're like, well, we're not going to play that
Sometimes you
anymore.
also know a piece is right for them and you pass it out and you start working on it. And then you realize this is not vibing with like, and it's not that they should it shouldn't be able to play it, but it's like, is this worth? So sometimes what I'll do is I'll have another piece in mind someday and I'll like put it on as they're walking in and I'll just see how they react. And if they seem to
I
love
love
that
that.
piece, then I'll say in my mind, I'll say, okay, we're going to pass that one out in a week and we're done with this one now. And I won't
Yeah.
even tell them. Just be like, oh, we're going to try this. And they love it. You know, it's just like sensing whether or not the piece is working for them or not. I don't know
Yeah,
how to do
that's a
that. It's
really
like
great idea. I love
they have to
that.
like the piece.
Yes. And I've done something similar to that too, where I'm like, I'm thinking about this piece. Let's listen to it. And then the kids, if they're like, yeah, that piece is awesome, then I'm like, okay, great. And if they're like, oh yeah, that's pretty nice, I'm like, okay,
Okay,
so
so
you're not actually gonna work
I
on
want to
it.
throw a piece out there, and I love
Okay.
traditional band works. I love standard band rep. Like I love all the types. I'm not like a pop only kind of teacher. Like I love the traditional stuff.
Yeah.
There's a grade two, I almost said chart, piece by Paul Murtha on A Thousand Years from Twilight. I don't know
Okay.
if you've heard it. It's
I
like
haven't, but I
legit.
love Paul
It's
Murtha. He does great
legit
arrangements.
gorgeous, and kids love it. And it's like a ballad for a band that like really struggles with a ballad.
Yeah.
I know it's like
Writing
this
it
movie tune,
down.
but
Yeah.
it's great.
Well, we love getting like recommendations
Yeah.
too of pieces that we can put on the podcast and review. And so we're writing it down right now. So
Yeah, just
that's
wrote it down.
awesome.
That's a good
I
one.
love it.
Okay, so other helpful resources that you like, you know, to learn from that you might want to share with other people.
Absolutely. So we love to talk, like we love to just talk to other band directors, similarly to what we're doing right now. We have a wonderful district that we work in where we have like 30 other middle school band directors that we can bounce ideas
That's
off
crazy.
of. Hey, I'm struggling with this. What would you do? Or I'm having this problem. Or hey, I just wanted to celebrate like this win. Everybody brought their clarinet today or whatever. And so I think that communal, just like uplifting and also place to go that's a safe space to ask questions is so important and not something that everybody has. And we know that. So that's kind of why we like doing our podcast, so we can help mentor people, even if we never meet them. We hope it's helping them pick their music in a way. That's something that I think is so important to me. If I have a question about a piece, my first person to ask is Laura and her husband, who's also a band director. But that's like something really neat that we have that maybe other people don't have.
I also think here in Texas, we have I mean, our music conventions are next level. And I think it is so important for teachers of all ages to attend and soak up the knowledge from all the people around us. So we are, I mean, obviously diligent about attending conferences, and it's not just about, you can always learn something. It's not just about going in the social aspect or the networking aspect, sitting down in sessions with other band directors that you respect and learning from them, I think is just critical. I love podcasts. So I am all about maximizing my time. And so I love the ability to plug in and listen to a podcast while I'm driving to work, while I'm exercising. I think if I can multitask, then I feel like I'm taking care of business. So I like professional development or getting better at my craft while also doing something
Yeah.
else.
And I think that just the role of a mentor is so
Oh,
important and
yes.
critical. We talk about that a lot. Our district even like assigns a mentor to new teachers so that way they can kind of learn the ropes. But like we talk about that a lot at convention. Like, go find a mentor. People will do it for free. They care about you. You know, I have a lot of people that love to send me recordings of their band before they go to UIL and like, hey, Katie, will you just take a listen and write me some notes on a score and send it to me? Yes, of course. Like, I'm more than happy to help people. And I just think that giving back to people is so important as you, like Laura said, as we're getting older in our educational years. I just think finding a mentor and then asking for help and not being afraid to ask. There's a lot of people who are like, I don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing. You know, nobody cares that you don't know what you're doing. Like, what you're doing is asking for help so that your kids can have the best experience. That's all it is. As simple as that. Whatever you need to ask, ask it because you want to do what's best for your kids.
I am not a, you know, I'm not a TikTok person, but I think there is an assortment of resources out, even on the web. As long as you just find that you are following smart people, just make sure that they know what they're doing. But I think you can. There are all kinds of resources to get information. The world is so small right now, with technology
Social
being what it
media,
is. Yeah, I mean, it's.
Facebook groups, Instagram
I
groups,
mean, look at us. We're sitting here connected.
yeah,
You're in, New York, aren't you in New York?
Maine,
Maine. You're in Maine.
Maine.
New York.
The way life should be is our motto.
Yeah.
Definitely not in Texas in October. It's so hot here right now.
It is so hot.
You're mentioning mentorship. I just want to mention recently I met with Vanessa, Megan, and Phil from Idaho, who were three band directors, and it was all about mentorship. They run a big mentorship program there. So anybody who's like is into the
Awesome.
mentorship thing, it was episode 280. I also wanted to mention another great way to learn at conventions is there's an honor band there. Go watch the honor band conductor. I mean, the amount of time there's a great honor band conductor and people are like having donuts in the other room. It's like check
Yep.
out the rehearsal, even if it's one phrase that they use, get that. Okay, so to close, and again, I haven't prepared you for this, so let me know if we need to pause the recording or not. I'm going to ask you to name a piece that is like one of your all-time favorites, not for your band to play, but like just to experience a piece. I'm going to say one that I've done with my band a few times, but that I love. It's the Shostakovich Prelude in E flat minor, which is just such an amazing piece. I love that. Super dark and super emotional and like 2 minutes long. So,
For me, mine would be, and we have not talked about this, you're going to die because it's the same composer, but mine would be Luke Sorumque by Eric Whitaker. And I heard the choral version first, and the choral version about brought me to my knees when I heard it for the first time. And we were at, this was a million years ago, at our TMEA convention, and one of the all-state bands played. It was just after the band arrangement came out, and it brought me to tears. I mean, it was just breathtakingly beautiful, and I couldn't believe the orchestration and how it sounded like it wasn't all that different from the choral version. I mean, I was just absolutely blown away. So that is a piece that impacts me every time I hear
And I've already said mine, but
it.
it's October. I just love that piece. It's beautiful. It's moving. Like Laura said, I will never be able to play it with my band. But this is a true story and it's so sweet. It makes my heart happy. I have a former student who is now studying to be a band director. She's a music education major at a college in Texas called Texas Christian University. And she is, they are playing October right now in her college band. And she reached out to me to be like, Miss Lewis, you used to always say you wished we could play October because you love that piece so much. And guess what? Now I'm gonna play it. So I'm gonna get her live stream link and get to watch her play this piece that she knows that I connect with. I just thought that was so sweet. And that
That is
literally just
sweet.
happened like 2 days ago that she sent me the message about them playing it.
That's
So
awesome.
it's just the best piece. It's so pretty.
That's great. You both
Yeah.
said Eric Whitaker. I wonder if it's possible to
I
have Eric
don't.
Whitaker write a piece at the grade 1.5 level. Like, is
I
that
mean,
possible?
Steel Lullaby.
Is a
Listen.
great piece.
It's gorgeous. I have played that, and that, I mean, it was
But I
gorgeous.
like your idea of even like a 1.5 or
Yes.
something. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of beautiful grade ones out there. Whispers in the Wind by Robert Sheldon, Falling Rain. I can't remember who that's by right now, but all these pieces, there's Swearingen, I think. There's all these really wonderful younger band lyrical pieces that we can still teach musicianship to seventh and eighth graders without it being overwhelming
Yes.
and something where they're going, I can't make this sound beautiful, or where they're going, it's just whole notes.
Yeah.
I don't want to play this,
Yeah.
It's all how you approach it too as the director. If you're excited about it, they're going to be excited about
They'll
it
buy you
too.
know, I assume you know, but some people don't know, like the age of the kid has to do with their heart rate, like the younger kids have a higher heart rate, and that
Yes.
your heart rate has to do with the pulse that you're comfortable playing music, right?
I believe it.
Yes.
So like that's why my wife's like, yeah, ballad at whatever age, like I'm not even trying it because they're not,
Yeah.
you know, and it's like not just
60's not going to work.
yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. That no, I
Heart
didn't
rate's part of
actually
it.
know that scientific little tidbit. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
It makes
So,
perfect sense.
yeah.
Makes
Well,
perfect
Katie
sense.
and Laura from Band BFF's podcast, thank you so much for being here. And everybody, if you have not listened to it, you should check it out and learn from them. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks,
Thank you so
Kyle. We
much for
appreciate
having
it.
us.
We sincerely appreciate you taking your valuable time and listening to the Growing Band Director podcast. Your students are very lucky to have a band director like you. If you have any suggestions for episode topics or think you have an area of expertise to share on a show with us, please reach out. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your band director friends to subscribe as well. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, our YouTube channel, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening to The Growing Band Director. See you next week.